A very good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Pierre Noël, Belgian guy, French-speaking, living in Hong Kong for the last 17 years. And what I'm doing here is really coming to you as a practitioner, talking to other practitioners, just sharing with you some of the projects that I was involved with over the last 10 years, mostly before I joined IBM. So actually, the topic of this discussion is the way of elements to share relative to bringing enterprise risk management at the boardroom level, so that the board people, the directors, would have a better understanding of what risk means in the context of the organization, be in a position to take risk-based decisions related to large projects that are submitted to the board. So just sharing information. And I would hope that this discussion at some time is controversial, and I would hope that you would have comments, suggestions, experience to share. I'm just one practitioner like you all, so we all share here. If anything, I would say that these 9 slides I have are here to generate some discussion. I'm by no means saying this is the right way or anything. I'm not that type of guy. I'm just saying this worked, perhaps because we were lucky, perhaps because it was the right culture, but do whatever you want with it. That's a question I love to ask everyone. My job at IBM is really to go all over the world and talk to customers all over the world and talk to regulators all over the world, be it finance, transport, government. And questions I've been asking over the last 12 months is, do you see more incidents these days? That's not directly related to this discussion, but that's to build my knowledge and to build our collective knowledge. Have you witnessed more incidents these days compared to the level of incidents you had before the crisis started up? What would you say? Do you see an increase of incident frauds, for example, taking place within your organization? Yes.
One of the boards I sit on is a regulator, and we do see that coming, particularly the fraud coming out. It's not that they necessarily weren't happening before, but certainly with the squeeze, the credit squeeze, liquidity problems, it pops out.
Thank you very much. That's what I continuously hear. I mean, from all the other countries. That's what I kept. And I was in Ottawa yesterday, and I asked the same question, and the feedback was also positive, in the sense that, yes, we seem to see more incidents, probably due to the crisis, the economical crisis, the fact that people have more personal problems and that generates more frauds and whatnot. But, so many people say that this year is the year of risk management. That might be true. Biggest problems I had in helping organizations or helping boards, the board of directors within these organizations, to embrace enterprise risk management is complacency. Just to summarize, my personal experience is to have helped 5 or 6 organizations worldwide at the board level. In some organizations, I was asked to help them to build enterprise risk management from scratch. That was the case for a very large multinational organization, about 200,000 people worldwide, with operation here in Canada. They didn't have enterprise risk management. I helped a very big bank in Asia, because on paper they had risk management, in reality they didn't know how to spell risk management. That's another problem. Helped transport, I helped airlines, and I helped government. This is my experience so far. Biggest problem, complacency. Pierre, we've been operating for 20, 30, 60 years. Pierre, we've been profitable. We are the most profitable airline organization in the world. Why do we need that stuff? Why would that be at all relevant to us? So that's the problem we usually have to deal with, the problem we have to fight, or the feedback we have to fight when we want to see the board of directors to see value in understanding risk management and making use of risk management information for the business decision. I have witnessed that many organizations do not have enterprise risk management ingrained in their corporate culture, even if every bank is supposed to have risk management. Well, not every bank does have risk management information at the level of the board of directors. Risk management, i.e. credit risk, market risk, remains usually within the boundaries of the risk management team, and it's not necessarily exposed to the director. Similarly, if you talk to transport, airlines industry, they have a strong risk management practice, but it's kept at the engineering level, and usually it does not percolate at the board level. Board people don't understand risks, even if this is an airline, even if this is a transport organization, even if this is a food organization, pharmaceutical organization. Digressing a little bit, something that always fascinated me, and I'm just sharing it, and please, if you disagree, let me know, is that when we speak about organizations with good risk maturity, organizations that do really understand risk, usually we think about banks. Banks have got a good risk maturity. I had this discussion with Koenig, the previous president of Premier, the discussion we had a few years ago in Singapore, where I told him, you know, from my little experience, pharmaceutical and food and transport have got significantly better understanding of risk management, and I'm talking operational risk management, than banks. For banks, many banks, operational risk management is a new topic. Case in point, Basel II. Basel I, there was nothing related to operational risk management. Basel II, it's only in the advanced measurement approach that we speak about operational risk management. So it's like, ooh, it's brand new. And I have seen that there is this understanding that banks have got a strong expertise in risk management. That's definitely true with respect to credit and market risk. And I would venture to say from my experience that this is much less true in the context of operational risk, for what it's worth. Why, from my experience, why should we make the board involved? So the different cases I had to deal with that led the board of directors to come to the decision that they needed to have an understanding on risks going forward. One was regulatory constraints. I don't know about Canada, and forgive me, I just don't know about Canada. I can talk about many countries, but I have no experience or expertise in Canada. But as a consequence to Sarbanes-Oxley, I have seen many countries building regulation that would impose directors' responsibility in the sense that directors could no longer say, in face of a problem, something like, I was not aware, I didn't know. It's no longer true in many countries. In many countries, you had to know. Mr. Director, if you tell me you did not have the information, this is your fault, you are subject to collect the information. Whatever decision you make must be an informed decision. And that really triggered few organizations to come back to us or to come to the market, the risk management market, and say, we need to have better understanding or better visibility on the reality of the organization. We are now forced by the regulator to have knowledge about the risks, because all the decisions we take are liable to us, you know, can reflect into our responsibility. So this triggered some organizations to put in place enterprise risk management. Evolution, maturity, I have dealt with organizations where from my experience, it's a new director came into the board, and this director had prior experience in risk management, and this director said, guys, we really need to have risk management visibility within our organization because we don't know where we are going. And so that's pushing the organization, the chairman of the board, to take a decision and say, okay, we really need to put in place enterprise risk management visibility at the level of the board. Let's make it happen. So that's what I would call an evolution, a maturity, where people within the board come to realizing that it's time for them to integrate risk management in their business decision, in their boardroom decision. And I had cases where ERM just appeared on the board's radar zone because of regulation. Again, Sarbanes-Oxley is a good example. Rating agencies, that was the richest person in Asia, was talking to rating agencies, and for one of his organization, I cannot disclose the name, but that's not too difficult to find. And the rating agency said, was Fitch or Moody's, doesn't matter, said, okay, from a finance point of view, you're good, but what are you doing from a risk management point of view? And so the chairman said, what are you talking about? Well, yes. And I don't know if any of you are from the rating agencies, if you can corroborate that, but it seems like the rating agencies at some point in time, I don't know if it still is true right now, but at some point in time, started to put some emphasis on risk management. And so in that time, that's exactly what happened. Talking to the chairman of the board, the rating agency said, you should really have some risk management to demonstrate that you have a good perspective on the risk. You are handling your finance very well. There's no doubt about that. But you should demonstrate to us that you have a good visibility on the reality of your risks and you are addressing these risks that you deem unacceptable. That triggered this chairman to go to the CEO of the group, of the holding company. We are talking about 200 plus thousand employees all over the world, including here, handling 40 different types of industries, telecommunication, oil industry, harbor, port operation, and all that. And he said, we really need to deploy enterprise risk management from scratch. They had nothing, just nothing. They had someone in charge of risk management, but in fact, his sole responsibility was to negotiate insurance policies. That's what enterprise risk management was for them before. But so the rating agencies triggered this organization to really build enterprise risk management and demonstrate that boardroom decision would integrate risk aspects in their decision. Significant incident, I had this case of an organization that decided to open an office in a dangerous country, and that backfired in the sense that there has been some incident associated with that office open in that dangerous country, and as a feedback that generated lots of bad press and bad reputation for that organization. And so the chairman of the board one day said, no, this is not acceptable anymore. Why did we take that decision? Who decided to open an office? Well, it was you, mister. There was a boardroom decision 6 months ago and everybody approved. We have a problem. We need to put in place some mechanism so that this type of situation doesn't happen anymore. And that triggered. They had a risk management department, but they didn't have visibility. They didn't know the reality of the risks associated in opening an office in Nigeria. They didn't know. And so they said, yeah, it looks like a good idea. Nigeria, it's growing, lots of money, let's do it. Boom. Why making the board involved? If anything, I don't know about Canada. So again, I don't know. What I can tell you is that there is a culture in some countries that the board of directors is nothing else but rubber stamping. I can point one country in Europe, starting with F. People speak French, where they have this culture. Where if you are a director in the board, most likely you are also the CEO of another company and the member of the board are the CEO of the company you are a member of the board. They all, you know, it's incestuous. But that's the way it is. And so when something is presented to the board directors will never disagree. They will sign it off because that guy I'm signing the document for, that CEO actually is a director in my own board. So I rub you, you rub me, and everybody is happy. That's the way it works. And that's not only there. It's also in Japan, for example. Anyways. So you have situations where the director's perspective is, I'm not going to question this proposal submitted to the board. I don't have enough visibility on the inside. And I don't want to look stupid asking silly questions, you know. So if the chairman says it's a good idea, it's probably a good idea. Let's sign it off. And that can lead to opening an office in Nigeria and then a big backfire. So if anything, one of the good outcome of deploying enterprise risk management at the board level enables the board members to ask the right questions. Thank you very much. Someone is saying that we should open an office in Nigeria. What are the risks associated with that decision? Can someone expose in layman's terms the risks associated with this idea. What could go wrong? I don't know about your experience. For those of you who are chief risk officers, do you right now have the possibility to expose the reality of risks at the board level? Are you talking to the board, and are you feeding this kind of information to the board so that they're in a position to understand risks associated with a business decision? Is it not yet? Little bit? Okay, you are. As a director, are you receiving this information for the different organizations you are?
Yes, well.
You do?
I do.
You have a maturity that I do not see in many other countries.
Not that it couldn't be improved, it could be better. Some of them are more mature.
Yes.
But yes, I do get that information.
That's interesting.
And I can probe down to other layers in the organization if I need more information.
Very good. Can we generalize that to all the big organizations in Canada, or is it an exception?
No, I think these may be rather exceptional.
And why is that? I mean, why do you have that chance of having risk visibility within the board? Is it because you have a sponsor, or because of the culture of the organization?
Well, because we have a duty of care as directors.
Regulation.
A number of commissions, big reports, the day commission, on where were the directors when things happened.
Interesting. Question for you. In Hong Kong and in other mature countries in Asia, which I know reasonably well, we have seen changes in regulation, in the sense that, for example, in Hong Kong, for all the public listed organizations, you need to have at least one director who's got a CPA, Certified Public Accountant, certification, and at least one director must be an independent director, absolutely nothing to do with the organization, as a way to bring, you know, more expertise at the board level.
Here you can't get listed. It's one like the stock exchange rule. You're not listed unless a certain percentage have to be independent.
Well, definitely you have the maturity.
And the CEO can't be the chair.
Really? So IBM could not be headquartered in Canada.
Could not.
That's interesting.
And the other thing, too, in Canada, we have a lot of privately held companies that are family-owned, large companies, and even though a lot of those companies are also looking at what the publicly traded companies are doing and trying to improve their governance as well. They're trying to, you know, mimic what happens in the publicly traded companies. Not all of them, but a few more. But there's still those old boys
the expression is parsley on fish.
It's a good one. Okay. Typical difficulties I personally encounter. Did I say complacency? Did I ever say complacency? Complacency. I really. Let me do it the first. I really had this case. We have been running trains for the last 30 years. Everybody says we are the best. Why should we add anything more to what we are doing? I mean, it's not broken. Why do you want to try to fix it? We are the biggest bank in Asia, and definitely we know what we are doing. Yeah, the hell you know what you're doing. Lack of effective communication between the risk management team and the board. That is my experience, that the people appointed at the level of chief risk officer for some, again, I cannot say every organization, I can only talk about the organizations I dealt with, for what it's worth. But the people appointed as chief risk officers were technicians, for lack of a better word, specialists in their fields, absolutely incapable of talking to business people. Not being able to expose the findings in the way that would be understood by the business people. consequently, the business people would not invite these people to talk to them, would not require anything from them. I just don't understand you. So lack of effective communication between the risk management team and the board, that's something I had to fight. Technolingual. With all due respect, there are some risk officers, when they start talking even to me, and I'm in the field, I'm lost. After 5 minutes, I'm absolutely lost, because we get into technical details. And when I put myself in the field of a director, I'm lost after 20 seconds. So again, why do we want to talk to these people? We just don't understand what they are saying. Director point of view is, that's the example I usually use, well, we, the board, we've got these 10 projects on the table. We would like to understand which projects are no-brainer from a risk point of view, which projects have some risks, and we would like to be exposed to the reality of these risks, and which projects don't make sense. That's all we want to know. We trust you for doing the right research and collecting all the information. We don't want to understand about this information. All we want is to understand whether this project should be okay, should go along, or whether they should be blocked. That's all we want. Tell us this in a simple way, and that's all we're interested in. An appetizing voluminous risks report. One organization where they said they had enterprise risk management, actually by interviewing some of the board directors, they told me, Pierre, the reality is 2 weeks before we have our board meeting, we receive this 200 pages report on risks. We've never opened that book. I mean, it contains things we just don't understand. I mean, that's sharing, you know, face to face, telling me, Pierre, we don't know what to do with that. Misalignment with business concerns. So again, it's related to technolingual. There is a risk management team within the organization, but we don't understand what they are talking about, because we have a simple question. Should we go ahead with this project? And we receive these 200 pages of document, or we talk to the chief risk officer and he's not capable of giving us an information that we can act upon. Something like, yes, go ahead, or 70% risk, or 20% risk. That's what we want. That's all we need. This is a big problem, and if you have found a way to fix it, please tell me, share it with us. In one end, we have this notion of risk appetite, and everything related to risk management within the organization should be derived from the risk appetite. What is the organization ready to take as a risk? I would venture to say that we should obtain this risk appetite from the most senior executive within the organization, i.e. the board. Now, you might disagree. Usually when I talk to people, we seem to agree that we expect it from the board. How can we get it? How can we, in a meaningful way, collect information from the board to have a good understanding on what is the current risk appetite within the organization? I don't have a solution. I have personally tried different mechanisms. The last one was a very bitter one, where I really wanted to understand the perspective of the organization for a specific topic. But I knew, for political reason within the company, that if I were to ask that question, I knew what answer I would get, and I knew that this answer might not necessarily represent the reality. So I tried for 15 minutes to ask a lot of questions in another direction to get a feeling, just to get a feeling of what they really meant with that. And after 15 minutes, I got some of the board directors very upset, saying, Pierre, why are you taking us there? You're boring. We're not interested in that. Okay, actually, what I wanted to know is this. And then I got the official answer, and that was useless. But, so capturing and communicating the risk appetite of the organization, please share it with us if you have a way to do it. And risk appetite evolves. I think I have a slide on that. So we cannot just do that once every 5 years and hope that it will be good forever. Oh, yes. I don't know if it works like that in Canada. Probably in USA it's not the case, but in Asia. Oof. Pierre, you're not going to ask questions to this director. He's too senior. Is such an important person. Can you imagine? He's the richest person in Asia. Of course you're not going to ask a question to that person. Or this director for this large Japanese organization, he doesn't speak very good English. You know, you don't embarrass him by asking him questions. So lots of gatekeepers. I encountered in this organization lots of gatekeepers, people telling me that I could not, I cannot, and I should not ask questions to these directors, especially questions regarding risk appetites or probing or whatnot. Whereby in reality, these directors are just waiting for people to ask these questions. They want to share. Li Ka-shing, did I say Li Ka-shing? Whoops. That's all he wants. He wants to share his perspective. What do you think about this? Well, I'm glad you asked. Ta 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 ta. And this Japanese director, well, he spoke a very good English. Just like people believe, or we always have lots of gatekeepers, and we've got to go through these gatekeepers. But again, I don't know if you have this problem in Canada. I will speak about governance, but it's essential to establish proper governance or to have proper governance being commonly accepted within the organization, including the board, before we can deploy proper risk management that would feed all the way to the board. Share it. What do you think? Sir? Yes. Yes. I love your point. My answer would be to say it's not up to the board to ask these questions and try to understand. It would be up to the regulator. In the context of USA, in the context of a bank in USA, I would pinpoint to the Federal Reserve as the people who has the responsibility to identify whether the risk management team with this organization has got a clue of what they are doing. Oh, yeah. Sarbanes-Oxley would say, you've got to sign this document with your blood, which is the fact, which means that you have to have a good understanding on all the risks associated, which means that you should probe and you should ask questions so as to have good visibility, not only on what the risk officer is telling you, but also on the experience and on the model. You bring an external consultant there. Yeah. Not perfect. Sir?
I guess my follow-up question is,
regulator, if we have regulator, and that's assuming regulator has a clue, big assumption. I'm not saying that for Canada, again, but in many countries that's not the case. Not auditors, they're not the right people for that, yes.
There are boards that do hire consultants,
yes,
themselves to advise the board. So
yes,
that's an option.
Makes sense to me.
I know there are risk people who advise boards.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. External expert. I'm not smiling because I remember some cases where the external experts and were university professors who were invited to give an opinion, and the opinion was purely theoretical, so it was not helpful either. So you also have to identify the right experts and someone with field experience. Yeah. What kind of people, these organizations, you know, to have required external experts to come and advise, what kind of experts were invited?
One that was a financial institution where the board brought in an expert in market risk, for example.
Okay, from a consulting organization then?
Yeah. Somebody needs to head up yours, actually, right? That does a fair amount of that.
Okay. Someone recognized in the community as being someone
with
the...
Names on a lot of books.
Okay, right. That, yeah. 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 Again, you've got case, Canada is very different than the other countries where I have practical experience, so I'm pretty sure that some of Japan, for example. Japan, they would invite a university professor who's got no practical experience. Perhaps a genius from a theoretical point of view, but no practical experience. So what kind of advice can you give? I always have a question here. That's a very bad question. I always, personally, always have a fight, or often have a fight, as the compensation criteria for chief risk officers. How do we give, what kind of incentives should we associate with the salary of a chief risk officer? Should it be a flat salary, no matter what happens? Should it be linked on performance? If so, what kind of performance? Do you have any comment on this? Oh, is it a bad topic? Is it what is commonly done in Canada? Do chief risk officers have specific incentives or specific performance criteria? Or is it usually, you are an expert, do whatever you want, even go to sleep, you will receive the same salary or the same incentive? Okay. That's something I always, I would not say bother me, but I think this is a critical part. If we want to make sure that the risk management team brings the right value beyond just being a risk management team, we have to find the right incentive. And we have to have a compensation structure that reflects these incentives and these expectations.
In the U.S., it's very high-paid salary and stock, not an option, but stock risk. But actually, most of them have very little bonus structure, but they have typically a base salary much higher than their peers in the front office.
Yes. And the bonus structure is awarded no matter what happens, or is it awarded upon reaching some?
Various banks, like Tier 1 U.S. banks, are typically revenue driven.
Yes.
They're not income driven.
So short term, actually. Short term.
Yeah.
Short term.
Quarterly.
Yes. Yeah, we have a problem. Yeah. I mean, I personally believe we have a problem. Because we give an incentive to the risk officer to eliminate, explicitly or implicitly, eliminate these risks that might impact the short-term revenue of the organization. I don't know if you know this organization. There is an organization in Hong Kong that I really admire. It's called SWIRE. SWIRE is an organization that has been in Hong Kong for perhaps more than 100 years. And there's bad things and good things with SWIRE. Good things is when they take a decision, it's over 20 to 50 years. So they take decisions that would impact the organization for the next 20 to 50 years. So they don't have quarterly results. And so they can really establish incentive over long, long, long term. And that really changes the way the people behave within this organization. That's a good thing. The bad thing is all the directors are people from Oxford and Cambridge, from the same family, very incestuous, and consequently it doesn't bring a lot of fresh blood into it, and they don't move very fast. But anyways, that's disgracing. Success factors, what I can identify as some reasons why we succeeded in bringing risk management at the board level, would be to convince the chief risk officer or bring the right chief risk officer and ensure relentless translation of risk information into business context. To make sure that the directors would trust the chief risk officer as someone who understands the business problems, as someone who would no longer talk a techno-lingua, a lingua that would be only understood by the CFO and the risk people, but would be able to talk a language that everybody within the board of directors would be capable of understanding. So this relentless translation of risk information into business context, to the point where one example, we had to demote an existing chief risk officer because he was probably very good in his practice but very incapable of talking to the board of directors, and slot someone in on top of him who was not as good as he was, but he was a good manager with a lot of reputation on the market and business acumen, so he was the right person to talk to the directors. In your face. And even if this is very controversial, even in Asia, I personally always push this idea of doing things in the office. I like to give two examples. One that seems absolutely not related to risk management or boardroom, but that always impressed me, and as to how to do it and what works. You certainly remember that 5 years, 10 years ago, there was this common understanding that Microsoft technologies, Microsoft product was not very secure. I remember that the press would play with that, and every week or every month the press would say, "Wow, this security, this Microsoft Windows, this Microsoft Word is full of hacks and everybody can penetrate." What I really admire is what Microsoft did at that time. Microsoft hired a guy with the role of chief security officer. It's somewhat irrelevant what the role was. But the task of that person was that he could go to any meeting within Microsoft without being invited, any meeting, any place. He had the right to go anywhere, sit down at a meeting, and start asking nobody, whatever questions he wanted. The result was that this guy would go uninvited to a meeting that would discuss about a new software, whatever, and he would start asking nasty questions about, and how are you doing to make this program secure? How are you doing this? How do you... So continuously talking about security, continuously bothering these people. The net of that, after 6 to 10 months, everybody was very fed up with that guy. And that was his job. He was probably very good at that. To the point where people started to think about security, because if I don't think about it, he's going to come again and he's going to ask me. So, you know, you certainly know, human beings usually can only deal with 7 things, at a maximum of 7 things there. All the other things are there. And what that guy did is to take one of these things called security and put it there, so that the people within Microsoft started to think with security in mind. And consequently, the quality of the Microsoft code started to improve significantly, to the point where now I believe people consider Microsoft applications are reasonably secure. In 3 cases, when we hired a CRO to report to the board, we explicitly asked the board to agree that the CRO would have the same rights. He would be able, he would be authorized to attend any meeting within the organization. Whatever he wanted to do, he could do it. And the job of the CRO would be to sit at these meetings and ask questions about risks and be nasty. I mean, have you thought about the risks associated with these projects? You're talking about doing this and that. What are the risks? To the point where gradually the organization, the vice presidents, the business unit people, the finance people would start thinking about risks. And I'm talking about operational risk here. Not talking about organization where credit risk and market risk is already implemented. And so gradually we would have this understanding of what risk is and the some visibility of risks, and that would percolate all the way to the board. It works very well. Be controversial, I've got another example to share. It's a friend of mine. He is chief risk officer for an airline, this airline that is successful, most profitable airline in the world and whatnot. Very complacent because they're so successful. What he's doing is continuously shaking the board, and he himself, he doesn't know whether he's going to stay with that company for much longer because he's upsetting people, but that's his job and he's doing it very well. Last thing he did, one day someone called him within the organization and said, "You have to come here." And the guy showed him a basket, and in that basket there was paper. The paper contained personal information about some frequent flyer, just, you know, the address, telephone number, and whatever. And that was just there on the basket. So he took a picture of that. Next boardroom meeting, he stood up and he showed the picture. And he said, "You believe that you are not at risk. You believe that the organization is being run as it should and whatnot. Look, that's an evidence of what's happening. What do you think it means from a reputation point of view? What do you think it means from a compliance to these data privacy regulations in our country and whatnot?" That the aim was really to shake the board so that these directors who had been within the organization for 10 years and didn't really know about these details would see in the face something that is really happening today. And that's, again, shaking the board, so that gradually the board would say, yeah, we really need to know more about what's happening. So bringing them good reasons so that they need to have better understanding of what risks are within the organization and have more visibility on these risks. Always trying to find a champion or mentor within the board, someone who has prior experience in risk management. Because that's my experience. If we don't have a champion within the board, this looks like a nice project that will die after 6 months. Unless you have regulation that really force you or whatnot. But even so, you can bypass Sarbanes-Oxley by always writing down the same documents. And you have l'esprit des lois, they say in French. You know, you have the way to do it, but you have what you think of it and how you behave and whether it changes your behavior or not. So my experience is, if we do not have a champion, if we do not have a mentor within the board, someone who truly believes in the value of risk management, this is an uphill battle, and at the end, no serious consideration will be given to this project, and after 6 months to 1 year, it will just die. Again, if you disagree, please. Sir?
Which committee do you think would have the greatest responsibility for before considering risk management.
Which committee?
Yeah.
Everybody except audit.
Everybody except audit.
Oh, yeah. That's the only thing I would say.
You wouldn't do it to one overriding committee, like the governance committee.
It really depends on the culture of the organization. I would not say anything like, let's do that this way. My personal experience tells me that it really depends on the way the organization is established. So no, I would not have a strong point to raise on that. Anybody except audit. I say that because I had a case of audit one day where the audit director was so strong, he said, that should go under me. Of course, that's that. This being said, I mean, would you agree with me that audit would have nothing to do with risk management, or would you disagree with me?
I disagree with you.
Very good. Please.
In part because the internal auditor reports to the audit committee on the board.
Yes.
And internal audit is a really good source of risk information.
I agree with
you. You want to have some, especially, you know, and ideally, well, it really depends on your business, I think.
Don't you sense a conflict to have the audit people to have risk management under the umbrella, which is what I'm saying? The director of audit or the vice president in charge of audit would...
No, that's a different issue.
Okay.
That governance issue is very different than a board from the board perspective.
Yeah. We agree then. Yes, okay. I'm with you.
One board I'm on, we have a risk management committee, but
yes,
their business is risk, so they need a risk management committee of the board of directors.
Of course, yes.
Because it takes a lot of time.
Yes.
Another one I'm on, it doesn't take as much time. So they have audit do it.
Can you elaborate on they have audit do it?
It's for part of the mandate of the audit committee of the board.
Yes.
To oversee risk management. So that they would look at, for example, the ERM reports first and grill management on it rather than the whole board. The whole board would get to see it, but this committee of directors would do the grilling. And
I don't see a conflict of interest in that case. If we are talking about the board level, you know,
yeah,
well, I would agree with you.
It really. Your time threshold, because you may have monitoring daily bar intervals or something,
mm-hmm,
and you don't want the audit team in monitoring that closely. But if your risk management team is only monitoring stuff on a monthly quarterly basis, then they basically become the audit team, which you don't want either.
That's quite right. But what do you expect the risk management team to do with respect to the board? Let me rephrase. Do you really expect that the risk management team should be present at every board meeting, or that there should be one item in the board meeting that should talk about risks? In my view, not. In my view, I expect two things from what I consider to be a good ERM within the organization. I expect continuous feed to the directors as to the evolution of risk within the company, but in a simplest possible way, i.e. a dashboard with a red light, green light, orange light per department, and that's all. So at any point in time, directors can have a look whether there is any change or whether we are at risk of anything. And that does not require to talk to the risk people. It's just a dashboard, something simple. And then I expect the risk management people to be grilled, either directly by the board or by a committee, whenever some specific decisions have to be taken, such as, okay, should we have this close relationship with this company? What are the risks associated with that? Should we open this office in Indonesia? Should we take this strong investment? That kind of decision require risk feedback or risk grilling, and at that time we expect the risk people to come, but not at every meeting. It's my experience, it's for board that would meet on a monthly basis, that would be once every 3 months that we would see the risk people being invited or being asked to feed information.
I would also expect, though, that the risk management is embedded into your strategic planning processes, your performance measurement processes, your budget processes. And as a director, if I didn't see it, if they weren't making risk-based decisions all the way through those key business decisions, then I would be very nervous.
Ah, you're so right on that. But again, you're working on the assumption of a very mature organization. We had to deal with organizations that did not have that level of maturity, and where people were not expecting to see any of these things in the documents they were dealing with or the information they were receiving. Reason why I said that we needed the CRO to be very pushy and controversial so as to create risk awareness, so that people gradually would say, what is the risk information associated with this proposal? What is the risk information associated with this compensation committee or whatever? And that, so we had to educate, my experience, we had to educate the people, because some organizations like this big bank, they had risks, but not at the level of the board. So it did not go there. So they needed to be educated on the need, and it had to become, you know, a reflex for them. Automation. They would have to expect it to be here. Okay. As much as possible, I always expect the CRO to have direct access to the board and participate to boardroom discussions. Again, depends on the culture. What I am always worried about is when the CRO does not have access and the CRO reports to the CFO and only the CFO goes to the board. Or the CRO reports to the CEO and the CEO goes to the board, and that's not good. I mean, we're all human beings. And sometimes the CEO has got a pet project, and that's his pet project, and he really wants it to see it through. And so he will eliminate or he will tone down any of the comments that the CRO might have or the risk management team might have for that project. And I think that's not the right thing. I think we need the CRO to have direct access. No. Yes?
Don't you think that somebody is always cautioning, is advocating for reducing risk or mitigating risk? They have an agenda. They don't take a balanced perspective. They think, everything's a risk. Every risk should be stamped out in some way. People get tired of it.
Very much so, you're right.
And they really don't, they'd rather hear from somebody who has a more educated business perspective. I said, look, here's our risk appetite as I understand it. Okay? Here's what we're, here's acceptable risk, and here's the delta that I think that we need to be concerned about, right? And just bring that to the board. And it depends on your time horizon. Is the board operating at a 5-year time horizon or a 10-year time horizon? or are we operating on a monthly, quarterly time horizon? And that came back to some other comments. But, so it seems to me that if I were a board member and I was I had an individual who was always coming in and telling me all the bad things that could happen, then I really want to just kick them out of the room.
Big time.
And hear from somebody who can tell me, okay, what's the delta between what we really were trying to accomplish and where are we stepping over the outside the box of what we're really doing? The risk that we're trying to accept. Obviously, we have to take many organizations, not all, do want to take risks. And in fact, beyond that, not only do they want to take risks, but in fact, if they want to engender trust with their stakeholders, they actually have to make themselves vulnerable and therefore willing to take risks, right? So that's the other side of the coin, right? And so who's advocating in favor of that? It seems to me like there's so much money and resources attention given to the defensive posture. Who's responsible for the offensive posture? You know, as opposed to just protecting what you have, getting what you want.
I so much agree with you. Any comments before I give you my views?
When David Koenig was here last spring, he talked about this very thing. And I think part of the issue, if you work in financial sector, because the strange thing in the financial sector where they try to separate risk management and the business side, and the risk manager's general role is to say no to the business side. And
that was one of my answers. Yes.
You know, maybe it shouldn't be a chief risk officer. Maybe it should be something else.
Quality. I increasingly, and I know I'm not the only one, probably many of you are, but I see lots of blogs these days from risk managers saying, let's evolve risks towards quality. Because that's what it is. Risk management. If you say risk management, for many people, you look negative, you look boring, you look as sexy as buying an insurance. Let's face it. Okay? Sorry, for those of you who work in the insurance. But if you start talking about quality, I am here to help the organization to improve quality by having more visibility on, you know, quality. If you look at the attributes of quality and the attributes of risk management, it's one-on-one. So I tend, as much as possible, to evolve the message, and when I present the vision to the board, I talk about quality. Unless the board has got, you know, it's a finance organization where risk is something they know, but otherwise it's quality. The second aspect, the second comments I want to give for what it's worth, I agree that the risk people always come with these negative things. Oh my God, these are the risks associated with that project. That is true. The way I try to fix that is through corporate governance and also by trying to use a risk methodology that accepts that at some point in time, business has got to step in and give their feedback to the point where in the risk methodology I tend to use, which is the Australian standard, the 4360, because it's simple. The risk people have got to do their job, analyze the risks, and come with a statement saying, this risk is orange, or the, you know, you're trying to classify in a simple way, this risk is, to me, unacceptable. But once the risk manager has given his statement, now is the time of the business people to step on top of it and to give their statement saying, I recognize and appreciate the fact that the risk manager perceives this to be a risk of orange quality. However, from my business judgment, taking my responsibility, I believe that the risk should be toned down and it should be considered to be a green situation. The value of this, to me, is that the message that will go to the board is a message that says, from a business point of view, we consider it to be green, after having analyzed the feedback from the risk manager who considered it to be orange. The risk manager did his job. It's written. It's in the minutes. The business manager did his job. It's written. It's in the minutes. It's his blood. And he knows that. And so consequently, we can expect that when the business manager decides to change, it doesn't change the conclusion of the risk manager. He can't do that. The risk manager has his conclusion or her conclusion, and that's final. But if he decides to tone it in a different way, this is in the minutes. That's his responsibility. Consequently, he will or she will think twice before he or she does that, because she cannot hide it anymore. But the message that will go to the board will probably be the result of the business executive saying, after careful consideration of all the risks, we believe that the risk is. Nonetheless, the risk manager said that the risk was. So we don't necessarily have someone bringing continuously the bad information. The risk manager can still have access to the board, but the information that is initially provided to the board is the information I just mentioned, for what it's worth. But really, this idea of moving from risk to quality is something that makes a lot of sense. Personally, whenever I try to put this in place, I'm always adamant that there must be proper corporate governance established within the organization, and I want, and I made that a condition to take a job or not. I'm talking about my previous life. I want an accountability principle. I want a statement, and I want everybody to understand that there must be someone, a human being, not a group of people, not a floating role, but a human being who has difficulty to sleep at night because managing the risk is his responsibility. The reason why I do that is because I've done too many post-mortem after big incident, finding that there was finger-pointing and nothing else but finger-pointing, and leading to no decision being taken because we don't know who is responsible, and I don't want that. So when we set up risk management within the organization that feeds all the way to the board, it must be identified that there is someone whose responsibility is on the line, who will be fired, demoted, whatever, if something goes wrong. Okay. So I'm against someone in charge of credit risk, someone in charge of market risk, someone in charge of operational risk, and the three different lines going to the CEO. I want consolidation. The corporate governance also, to me, has to address who resolves issues and takes final decisions, and how do we escalate concerns or issues. What I have seen is very often corporate governance documents, policies, or philosophy do not explicitly mention how do we deal with conflicts and how do we escalate, leading again to a stalemate, no decision being taken, and this problem being forwarded, to the point where directors will no longer talk about it and they will take a decision without having visibility on what the risk people would think. Yes?
That accountability principle, I'm having trouble with that.
Good.
CEO?
If you want to. But the reality would be that the CEO has got to worry about the business.
But that's what it says here.
Did I say CEO? No.
Well, no, but it says the managing the risks associated with the organization.
Yes. I would tend to say the CEO has got, of course, the CEO has got all responsibilities within the organization, but I would say that the CEO's responsibility is to grow the business. And so I prefer to have someone reporting to the CEO, but someone specifically tasked and specifically with the responsibility of understanding the risks and dealing with the risks of the organization.
In the last slide, you talked about the reporting to the board that the risk person would report on risk.
Yes.
And the business manager would give their view, and they're the ones who assign their blood to them. So should they be the accountable person? Because they're the ones who are saying, okay, here's what the risk person said, but this is the decision that's going to be taken. So if they're taking the decision, shouldn't they be the...
Two different things.
Okay, well, explain why it's different.
In in the risk methodology I usually use, the risk manager does his job, does her job. She comes to a conclusion and she says, because I could not sleep at night, because I had to think about all these problems all the time, I come to that conclusion, and that's final. The business manager steps in and tone down, or agrees with the result of the risk manager, and that's final, and he signs it with her blood as well. If after this an incident occurs, we can pinpoint to the business manager because he changed the perspective and he said, this we should not be taken into account. The business manager decided to change the perspective, that's his responsibility. But that doesn't mean that the business manager is this person. This person is the person who has to continuously think about what could go wrong in my organization. That should not be the job of the business manager. I don't want a business manager. No. Now, I appreciate that. I've been CEO of a few organizations, and my job as a CEO was really to focus about, okay, how can I build this business better? And the job of that person in charge of the risk was to come to me and say, Pierre, I have a problem, and expose me with his vision of the problem. And then it's my responsibility to say, well, in any case, I would say, thank you very much for doing such a good job, but it's my responsibility to say, it doesn't matter, I'm ready to take that risk, that's my risk appetite. That would be my responsibility. But my responsibility is not to continuously look at the risks. If I were to do that, I would waste my brain, and my expectation towards the company is to think about growing the business, not to think about it. But again, my company had a big risk appetite compared to an established organization that has been around for 100 years, and then the mandate given to the CEO might be different. But my perception of what a CEO should do is really to grow the business, and he should have the right people to tell him, her, whenever there is something that needs to be exposed.
So if I understand correctly, yes. what you're advocating is that whatever they're called, the risk person, the CRO, whatever the title is,
that's their role to figure out a way to collect as much information as possible about the risks.
The downside.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Not the upside?
What would you say? What qualify upside? What do you mean by upside?
Well, because the risk is a variation from an objective. It can be the upside, it can be a downside. So ultimately, your chief risk officer optimizes.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. So from that angle, the upside as well.
You've got to consider the upside as well. Too.
But not grow the business. I mean,
You hit the nail on the head, I think, in an earlier slide where you said, you know, how do we identify and communicate the risk appetite? Because if we can't articulate as a board member, as a board, what our risk appetite is, how does that fill throughout the organization? And how is the chief risk officer ever going to have a sense of whether the risks are inside or outside the boundary? And I bet if you know, I could be wrong, but my bet is that if you were to ask a corporate director, ask any corporate directors, what's the risk appetite, they wouldn't know. In some vague sense, they would say, well, we're, you know, a blue chip company, we're a bank, or we're conservative, or, you know, we're high tech, so we're, you know. So they'll have a kind of a broad sense. But how do they communicate that? How do they paint that picture of the box? This is inside the box, and this is outside the box of our risk appetite.
If you have an answer to that, great.
Because every investor needs to know that. I mean, the thing that really I can't understand is, you know, this whole idea of profit maximization or maximizing return on investment is just a ridiculous notion. Because, you know, if I wanted to maximize my return, I would steal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's how I maximize my return. But if I want to do that, I would have a very short-term horizon. I maximize right now. Who cares for the future? But if I have, my appetite, risk appetite is low. It's low. I don't want to take a lot of risk. Obviously, I'm not going to try to maximize. I'm going to try to balance, right? So the question is: so any investor investing in a company is always making that judgment. Do I want to take the risk for the return? I'm not trying to maximize my return. Trying to figure out, you know, like the portfolio, different kind of companies, and so on. Now, to me, it's a mystery that boards, the directors cannot answer the question, what is our risk appetite? Because investors are making investment decisions all the time based on this balance. So that, I think it's pretty fundamental. We've got to answer that question. And then we've got to ask the question, should the chief risk officer, if that's what we want to call him or her, be responsible for that, for measuring the balance and reporting on the delta? Or should ultimately always that judgment, if you will, even the reporting of it. Now this is there's a reporting and then final decision, right? So there's the question of whether chief risk officer just reports the bad stuff, mm-hmm. and then the business manager, like the CEO, then makes the judgment as to whether that's within the box or outside the box, or whether the CRO, whatever we call a person, actually makes that assessment, whether it's inside or outside the box, and then report their assessment to their professional assessment, the CEO. These are unresolved questions, I think. But they're pretty fundamental.
I think that the risk appetite question, in my experience, part of the problem is the calculus of risk, right? So in order to say our appetite is X and not Y, you have to have a good way to calculate risk. And that's difficult to do even for the experts, and it appears that it's really difficult to communicate them. The other big part of the problem is if you say it's X and not Y, you're laying yourself vulnerable, and so boards and CEOs and senior management are extremely reluctant to articulate a risk appetite because that means they are willing to take a certain amount of risk. And human, by human nature, not all, but some people love to take risks, but a lot of us, the majority of us, don't want to take it. So we don't even want to admit that there is an appetite, and there's a tolerance around it.
It is.
But the psychological problem is that you have to get over is to say, yes, there is a certain amount of risk that you're willing to take. And what, in my experience, what I have found has worked to begin to get there, maybe not to get all the way there, is to find some way of saying what your current risk exposure is. And that is what you are taking on, whether you articulated it or not,
whereas I think the example you used, and I wonder if you can maybe elaborate, you said, my risk person says it's orange, but me as management, I'm going to say no, it's green.
Me as a manager would say, yes, it's orange, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
That's, in fact, what he does.
Right.
No, you're right. I did not explain it the right way. And thank you for holding that one. Yes.
Now, the point is you're going to be using the same metrics, but your risk people hopefully should be looking at similar metrics that you're going to use later to make.
Yes, that leads to classification of risks. That's another topic I'm going to get in. Another gentleman had a point.
Oh yeah, just want to wrap a little bit. This was you referred to the finance institution. I was qualified as one of the five best banks and have a risk management. And at least in our organization, I believe risk and business is hand in hand, it's left and right hand. And in my view, risk is not just about compliance, but also how to identify risk, how to price risk, so you look at it more like a return.
And quality.
So my own experience, every time our front office people, they work very hard, especially from the deal team, they'll get us involved, even pre-trade, seeing what do you think about the risk. So we try our best, as a gentleman, we might be, act as a devil's advocate, try to identify whenever possible in less than a half. We try to quantify as much as we can. Sometimes we can just use faster in those cases. But the goal is really work together as a partnership to, you know, make money within the risk of the bank. Also, on the possible risk appetite, I think my understanding at least for our bank, it's not something, you know, the board of directors will like kind of say, oh, that's our risk appetite. Risk appetite could be as quicker as maintain a rating for the bank. That's one way. That's a different way, you know, how much risk capital you can have, or could be market risk, could be a single number of borrowers, right? So those are well articulated. It's well communicated to, you know, like align risk manager, align client, right? So it's not just something you say in a cell, it's just transparent to everyone. And so in a sense, but it's also a mutual process. So you know, you should reach out to, you know, like the, our opinion and all the line with measures, because, you know, then pass that to the board. So the risk aspect evolves over time. It's not something static. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the way I look at it is non-linear, it's not like a linear, you know, kind of frame.
Right.
The culture is important. That's in a sense what I say, well, I have a very good risk culture in terms of everybody can all stakeholders think well taken into consideration. I don't know
whether it's just, you know. No, that, well, that sounds wonderful. I just wondering this accountability. See, I have this real big thing against the blame and shame.
Okay, no, yeah, I'm
so how would that work in your organization?
I think maybe this pyramid didn't mean that. I think your question is going to be, you know, if you are the chief risk officer,
yeah.
If you say, you know, roughly we're going to do a 10 billion deal or acquisition level, then you are the chief risk officer, you identify the risk, say, you know, this risk will be too big. This is all outside of, you know, our risk appetite. And then the CEO would say, you know, I'm going to override you, you know, I don't think the risk is too big. I think the risk is within the risk appetite. Then if the board approves, if actually things go wrong, actually had a big loss, I don't think she would still be fine for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question, right? Yeah. We agree as well. I mean, even now we're going to find chief risk officer. I think he or she already identified the risk up front.
I'm perfect. I'm perfect. Let me give you an example why I want this accountability principle. I met up with the chief risk officer of a European bank. We had a discussion about Basel II, yeah, about the need to build a loss database. I'm not going in details if you're not, I mean, some of you are not from the Basel II, whatever. And what she told me is, oh, Pierre, I'm very not satisfied because to build my loss database, I have to collect information about all the incidents taking place within my bank, and so I'm asking all the business unit VPs to feed me with these incidents. But they don't do it. That's a typical problem we have. They just don't do it. So that lady stood with a loss database, and she knows that this loss database contains perhaps 5% of the reality. And what does she do? She sits on it, and she complains. Oh, it's not working. Not good enough for me. I want her to find a way. I want her to own the problem. I want her to feel like if someone later on finds out that this loss database is not complete, she will not just, you know, point the finger at the business unit people. No, I want her to own the problem. So that she will go to the CEO, she will bring the business unit together at a meeting, and she will make sure one way or another that she gets this information. That is the reason of being of my accountability principle. It's a psychological thing. Nothing else but psychological. I want the person to own the problem. I have seen too many people saying, well, I only own part of the problem, and it so happens that the incident was not on my side of the problem, it was on someone else's side, and then finger pointing, and nobody takes accountability, takes ownership of the problem, and finally we don't evolve. And that's my problem. Make sense? But you still don't like it. I appreciate your point, but you are giving me a theoretical answer because I have seen many risk managers who give me the same, oh, it doesn't work. Yeah, do something about it. Oh, no.
But, of course, but that's an accountability principle that would apply to every business manager for things that fall within their responsibility.
Yes. But it goes without saying, it goes without saying, but it goes way better by saying it. And putting it in the governance document. In the governance document, every matter is related to risks is the responsibility of Pierre Noël.
Well, see, that's not even matter. What you said,
no, you're right.
The boss database is a very specific thing.
If you give me 5 minutes, I would find the governance and what I put in it exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, okay, I guess my point was, I want someone to be responsible and it's got to be understood, and I want the chain of responsibilities and decisions to be absolutely crystal clear, and everybody knows where he, she stands, including the board directors. I hate delegation, for example. If it is said in a corporate governance that we will have this and that director to participate to steering committee or to any other type of committee to analyze the risk, I don't want delegate, I want them. And that's got to be understood by everybody. All these kind of things. You might have different, I would not say perspective, but you might come from a different angle, but in the places where I had to put, to build an ERM, I really needed that. Because it was very fluid otherwise.
Yeah, just for clarity, when you say all stakeholders must be identified by the IT, you're talking about internal stakeholders.
Yes, indeed. Yes, internal yes. Internal stakeholders. Thinking if there could be any external, but no. Yes. Okay, the risk appetite, I think we've spent some time on that. Then I guess the last one. Still two slides. How do you qualify risks? I often advocate that we simplify risks at the level of the board and we have classification, simple classification, like a level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, and that's it. So that whenever information related to risks or risks associated with projects goes to the level of the board, we can say, oh, that's a level 2 one. Oh, that's orange, green, amber. We have to have a classification that is valid across the entire organization, and people within the board should understand what a level 1, level 2, level 3 means. And usually, if we are building up an ERM within an organization that never had risk management before, level 1, 2, 3 is more than enough. It's only when you have maturity that you might want to have 4 and 5, but to me, let's start up with 1, 2, 3. It's good enough. I have seen cases. Here is an example, just to share again. I worked with CRO. I mean, the airline didn't have a CRO, so they took a CRO. They brought a CRO on board, and they brought me on board as a consultant to help putting things in motion. And so while the CRO was busy dealing with the board and coming to some classification to determine the different levels of risk across the entire organization, engineering, finance, marketing, everything, I was busy with the IT department trying to build risk management within the IT department, because they didn't have, it was visible that they had some problems, but they didn't have any proper risk management. And the interesting aspect was dealing with the risk management people. I asked them through workshops to classify the different risks they had within IT. And so they came with a pyramid of risks, and they said, oh, this is the biggest risk we have. And if this happens, this is catastrophic within IT. And so taking the risks classification, the biggest risk they might have and whatever, putting it in perspective with the risk classification of the organization, it was interesting to see that what they considered like flashing red was barely orange at the organization level. And it was interesting but very dangerous as well. Because the negative aspect is when the IT people saw that the biggest risk was not in the top 10, then they said, why bother? Why should I worry about that? Which was the wrong attitude. So I'm getting into another type of discussion, but there must be, I strongly believe that there must be corporate-wide risk classification, something simple to be understood by the directors who've got other things to worry about than understanding the subtleties of risks. So simple risk classification. But within each department, we also have to have another pyramid so that they have an understanding of what should be the top 10 risks. And within the department, they should aim at fixing the top 10 risks. even if the top 10 risks is only on the top 100 within the organization. So we need to have two levels of risk management, at the organization level and at the department level.
One of the things is when you're siloed like that, in the aggregate, you might actually be diversifying your risks across the silo, but any given silo of your organization might be taking out a huge amount of risk, whereas this side is not.
Yes.
Okay, so if none of them have a perspective across all the areas, if you need somebody to kind of put on...
You need a holistic view.
We want that. And that's fine. Don't worry about that. It's not an important risk. I mean, yeah, it's a big risk, but who cares?
It's not in my top 10, yes. Let me just, because we are running way out of time. I am a strong advocate that even if you are not a bank subject to Basel II advanced measurement approach, have a loss database, please. And my reasoning to have a loss database might be different than the reasoning that a risk manager might have, but here it is. One great value of a loss database is to help us to substantiate a position in front of business people. If I don't have a loss database that states all my incidents over the last 12 months or over the last 36 months, being a risk manager or being someone who is in charge of deploying mitigating controls, I have a great difficulty to convince the board, to convince any business person in the necessity of allocating budget, allocating money to put in place these mitigating controls. I had this case as a CEO, I had this case numerous times where I would have a VP in my organization coming to me negotiating a budget. He would say, I need 10 million. Why do you need 10 million? Well, I need 10 million. I mean, they're very poor at substantiating or reasoning why they needed this or that. And I was always impressed when someone would come to me and would have a language that says, Pierre, over the last 12 months, we had 232 incidents of that category leading to a cost of about $2 million. I'm putting my responsibility on the table and saying that if I can deploy these mitigating controls, I can reduce the overall impact of these incidents by a factor of 50%, and we will have a meeting 12 months from now where we will analyze the effectiveness of my mitigating controls, and since I put my blood on the document, since I put my responsibility online, I will make sure that things are done the right way. I mean, when I have someone like that giving me this message, I give the money right away. It's an easy, it's a no-brainer. And consequently, I do see the loss database as a fantastic conduit to explain to business people, i.e. the board, but also the business unit VP, on the reality, giving the facts. This is what happened, but also this is my commitment to mitigate some of these risks or to reduce some of these risks by deploying some controls or whatever. So making use of the loss database from that perspective, actually. So every incident, every near miss should be recorded, even if regulator doesn't ask us to do that. It should be recorded in the loss database. That becomes the reference point. And also, we would be able to record information with respect to the effectiveness of mitigating controls. It's another discussion, but that's another problem I have. Very few organizations analyze the effectiveness of their controls. Well, okay, Sarbanes-Oxley, Section 4, yes, you've got to talk about the effectiveness, but aside from that, how do you really... Well, it's not how you do that. Very few people just do it. Very few people go back to the CEO after 1 year and say, this is the effectiveness of what we have done. Consequently, we have succeeded or we have failed and we need to adjust it. I think we have a problem. I am always advocate a dashboard. I already mentioned about the dashboard. There are a few organizations, I believe IBM does that as well, but probably many other organizations do have this kind of dashboard technology that collects information near real time. And so the directors, they have a small website or whatever that's only for them, where they can have visibility on where the organization stands, department by department, with respect to compliance to basic policies, with respect to compliance to regulation, so that before they go to a board meeting, they don't have to read a 200 pages document to tell them what's happening. They've got a snapshot. And so they can dig down, they can ask questions, but at least at any point in time they know where the organization stands according to the policy, so in terms of violations to these basic policy rules or whatnot. Make sense? I guess that's all. Yeah, that's all. So it took us 1.5 hours. I hope it was okay. Thank you very much for your time. Well, thanks to you. No, I'm happy I did it. I don't know if you know, but I was supposed to be here 2 months ago. Yeah. And then I had a small accident on the car. And so I really wanted to do that. And it was my commitment. Thank you.